minus 20, and counting. It could have been a bad dream, a nightmare that had crawled out of the dark and into the unhealthy limelight of his half-awake mind. More properly, a vision or a hallucination. His brain was working and concentrating on one level, dealing with the problem of navigation and the constant danger of McCone. On another, something black was taking place. Things were moving in the dark. Track on. Positive. Huge, whining servo mechanisms turning in the dark, in the night. Infrared eyes glowing in unknown spectrums. Pale green foxfire of dials and swinging radar scopes. Lock. We have a lock. Trucks rumbling along backcountry roads and on triangulated flatbeds 200 miles apart. Microwave dishes swing at the night sky. Endless streams of electrons fly out on invisible bat wings. Bounce. Echo. The strong blip and the fading afterimage lingering until the returning swing of light illuminates it in a slightly more southerly position.
Solid?
Yeah.
200 miles south of Newark. It could be Newark. Newark's on red. Also southern New York.
Executive hold still in effect?
That's right. We had him dead bang over Albany. Be cool, pal.
Trucks thundering through closed towns where people look out of cardboard-patched windows with terrified, hating eyes, roaring like prehistoric beasts in the night.
Open the holes.
Huge grinding motors slide huge concrete dunce caps aside, shunting them down gleaming steel tracks. Circular silos like the entrances to the underworld of the Morlocks. Gasps of liquid hydrogen escaping into the air.
Tracking? We are tracking. Newark.
Roger, Springfield. Keep us in. Drunks sleeping in alleys wake foggily to the thunder of the passing trucks and stare mutely at the slices of sky between close-leaning buildings. Their eyes are faded and yellow. Their mouths are dripping lines. Hands pull with senile reflex for newsies to protect against the autumn cold. But the newsies are no longer there. The Freevee has killed the last of them. Freevee is king of the world. Hallelujah! Rich folks smoke dokes. The yellow eyes catch an unknown glimpse of high, blinking lights in the sky. Flash, flash. Red and green, red and green. The thunder of the trucks is faded, ramming back and forth in the stone canyons like the fists of vandals. The drunks sleep again.
Bitchin'. We got him west of Springfield.
Go, no go, 5 minutes.
From Harding?
Yes.
He's bracketed and braced.
All across the night, the invisible bat wings fly, drawing a glittering net across the northeast corner of America. Servos controlled by General Atomics computers function smoothly. The missiles turn and shift subtly in 1,000 places to follow the blinking red and green lights that sketch the sky. They're like steel rattlesnakes, filled with waiting venom. Richard saw it all, and functioned even as he saw it. The duality of his brain was oddly comforting in a way. It induced a detachment that was much like insanity. His blood-crusted fingers followed their southward progress smoothly. Now south of Springfield, now west of Hartford, now
tracking.
Minus 19 and counting.
Mr. Richards?
Yes.
We're over Newark, New Jersey.
Yes, Richards said.
I've been watching. Holloway?
Holloway didn't reply, but Richards knew he was listening.
They've got a bead drawn on us all the way, don't they?
Yes,
Holloway said. Richards looked at McCone.
I imagine they're trying to decide if they can afford to do away with their professional bloodhound here.
Imagine they'll decide in the affirmative.
After all they have to do is train a new one.
McCone was snarling at him, but Richards thought it was a completely unconscious gesture, one that could probably be traced all the way to McCone's ancestors, the Neanderthals who had crept up behind their enemies with large rocks rather than battling to the death in the honorable but unintelligent manner.
When do we get over open country again, Captain?
We won't.
Not on a due south heading. We will strike open sea after we cross the offshore North Carolina drilling derricks, though. Everything south of here is a suburb of New York City?
That's about the size of it, Holloway said.
Thank you. Newark was sprawled and groined below them like a handful of dirty jewelry thrown carelessly into some lady's black velvet vanity box.
Captain,
wearily,
yes.
You will now proceed due west. McCone jumped as if he'd been goosed. Amelia made a surprised coughing noise in her throat.
West?
Holloway asked. He sounded unhappy and frightened for the first time.
You're asking for it, going that way. West takes us over pretty open country. Pennsylvania between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh is all farm country. There isn't another big city east of Cleveland.
Are you planning my strategy for me, Captain?
No, I do west,
Richards repeated curtly. Newark swung away beneath them.
You're crazy,
McCone said.
They'll blow us apart.
With you and five other innocent people on board?
This honorable country?
It will be a mistake,
McCone said harshly.
A mistake on purpose.
Don't you watch the National Report? Richards asked, still smiling. We don't make mistakes. We haven't made a mistake since 1950.
Newark was sliding away beneath the wing. Darkness took its place.
You're not laughing anymore, Richard said.
Minus 18 and counting. A half hour later, Holloway came on the voice comm again. He sounded excited.
Richards, we've been informed by Harding Red that they want to beam a high-intensity broadcast at us. From Games Federation. I was told you would find it very much worth your while to turn on the freebie.
Thank you. He regarded the blank freebie screen and almost turned it on. He withdrew his hand as if the back of the next seat, with its embedded screen, was hot. A curious sense of dread and deja vu filled him. It was too much like going back to the beginning. Sheila with her thin, worked face, the smell of Mrs. Jenner's cabbage cooking down the hall, the blare of the games, treadmill to Bucks, swim the crocodiles, Kathy's screams. There could never be another child, of course, not even if he could take all this back, withdraw it, and go back to the beginning. Even the one had been against fantastically high odds.
Turn it on, McCone said. Maybe they're going to offer us a deal.
Shut up, Richard said. He waited, letting the dread fill him up like heavy water. The curious sense of presentiment. He hurt very badly. His wound was still bleeding, and his legs felt weak and far away. He didn't know if he could get up to finish this charade when the time came. With a grunt, Richards leaned forward again and pushed the on button. The freebie sprang to incredibly clear, amplified signal life. The face that filled the screen, patiently waiting, was very black and very familiar. Dan Killian. He was sitting at a kidney-shaped mahogany desk with a game symbol on it.
Hello there, Richards said softly.
He could have fallen out of his seat when Killian straightened up, grinned, and said,
Hello there yourself, Mr. Richards.
Minus 17 and counting.
I can't see you, Killian said, but I can hear you. The jet's voice comm is being relayed through the radio equipment in the cockpit. They tell me you're shot up.
It's not as bad as it looks, Richards said. I got scratched up in the woods.
Oh, yes, Killian said. The famous run through the woods. Bobby Thompson canonized it on the air just tonight, along with your current exploit, of course. Tomorrow those woods will be full of people looking for a scrap of your shirt or maybe even a cartridge case.
That's too bad, Richard said. I saw a rabbit.
You've been the greatest contestant we've ever had, Richards. Through a combination of luck and skill, you've been positively the greatest. Great enough for us to offer you a deal.
What deal?
Nationally televised firing squad?
This plane hijack has been the most spectacular, but it's also been the dumbest.
Do you know why?
Because for the first time, you're not near your own people. You left them behind when you left the ground. Even the woman that's protecting you, you may think she's yours. She may even think it, but she's not. There's no one up there but us, Richards. You're a dead duck. Finally.
People keep telling me that, and I keep drawing breath.
You've been drawing breath for the last 2 hours, strictly on Games Federation. Say so. I did it. And I'm the one that finally shoved through the authorization for the deal I'm going to offer you. There was strong opposition from the old guard. This kind of thing has never been done, but I'm going through with it. You asked me who you could kill if you could go all the way to the top with a machine gun. One of them would have been me, Richards. Does that surprise you?
I suppose it does. I pegged you for the house, nigger.
Killian threw back his head and laughed, but the laughter sounded forced. The laughter of a man playing for high stakes and laboring under a great tension. Here's the deal, Richards. Fly your plane to Harding. There will be a games limo waiting at the airport. An execution will be performed. A fake. Then you join our team. There was a startled yelp of rage from McCone.
You black bastard!
Amelia Williams looked stunned.
Very good, Richard said. I knew you were good, but this is really great. What a fine used car salesman you would have made, Killian.
Did McCone sound like I was lying?
McCone is a fine actor. He did a little song and dance at the airport that could have won an Academy Award.
Still, he was troubled. McCone's hustling away of Amelia for coffee when it appeared she might trip the Irish. McCone's steady, heavy antagonism. They didn't fit. Or did they? His mind began to pinwheel.
Maybe you're springing this on him without his knowledge, counting on his reaction to make it look even better.
Killian said, You've done your song and dance with a plastic explosive, Mr. Richards. We know
that you are bluffing. But there is a button on this desk, a small red button, which is not a bluff. 20 seconds after I push it, that plane will be torn apart by surface-to-air Diamondback missiles carrying clean nuclear warheads.
The Irish isn't fake either. But there was a curdled taste in his mouth. The bluff was soured.
Oh, it is. You couldn't get on a Lockheed GA plane with a plastic explosive, not without tripping the alarms. There are 4 separate detectors on the plane, installed to foil hijackers. A 5th was installed in the parachute you asked for. I can tell you that the alarm lights in the void field control tower were watched with great interest and trepidation when you got on. The consensus was that you probably had the Irish. You've proved so resourceful all the way up the line that it seemed like a fair assumption to make. There was more than a little relief when none of those lights went on. I assume you never had the opportunity to pick any up. Maybe you never thought of it until too late.
Well, doesn't matter. It makes your position worse, but...
McCone was suddenly standing beside Richards.
Here it goes, he said, grinning. Here is where I blow your fucking head off, donkey.
He pointed his gun at Richard's temple. -16 and counting.
You're dead if you do, Killian said.
McCone hesitated, fell back a step and stared at the freebie unbelievingly. His face began to twist and crumple again. His lips writhed in a silent effort to gain speech. When it finally came, it was a whisper of thwarted rage.
I can take him! Right now, right here, we'll all be safe, we'll...
Wearily, Killian said,
You're safe now, you goddamned fool. And Donahue could have taken him, if we wanted him taken.
This man is a criminal!
McCone's voice was rising. He's killed police officers, committed acts of anarchy and air piracy. He's publicly humiliated me and my department.
Sit down, Killian said, and his voice was as cold as the deep space between planets.
It's time you remembered who pays your salary, Mr. Chief Hunter.
I'm going to the council president with this.
McCone was raving now. Spittle flew from his lips.
You're going to be chopping cotton when this is over, Nig. You goddamn worthless night-fighting son of a bitch.
Please throw your gun on the floor, a new voice said.
Richards looked around, startled. It was Donahue, the navigator, looking colder and deadlier than ever. His greased hair gleamed in the cabin's indirect lighting. He was holding a wire-stock Magnum Springsteen machine pistol, and it was trained on McCone.
Robert S. Donahue, old-timer. Games Council Control. Throw it on the floor.
-15, and counting. McCone looked at him for a long second, and then the gun thumped on the heavy pile of the carpet.
You.
I think we've heard all the rhetoric we need, Donahue said. Go back into second class and sit down like a good boy.
McCone backed up several paces, snarling futilely. He looked to Richards like a vampire in an old horror movie that had been thwarted by a cross. When he was gone, Donahue threw Richards a sardonic little salute with the barrel of his gun and smiled.
He won't bother you again. You still look like a queer stomper, Richards said evenly.
The small smile faded. Donahue stared at him with sudden, empty dislike for a moment, and then went forward again. Richards turned back to the freebie screen. He found that his pulse rate had remained perfectly steady. He had no shortness of breath, no rubber legs. Death had become a normality.
Are you there, Mr. Richards?
Killian asked.
Yes, I am. The problem has been handled.
Yes?
Good. Let me get back to what I was saying.
Go ahead. Killian sighed at his tone.
I was saying that our knowledge of your bluff makes your position worse, but makes our credibility better. Do you see why?
Yes. Richard said detachedly. It means you could have blown this bird out of the sky any time.
Or you could have had Holloway set the plane down at will.
McCone would have bumped me.
Exactly. Do you believe we know you are bluffing?
No. But you're better than McCone. Using your planet houseboy was a fine stroke. Killian laughed.
Oh, Richards, you are such a peach. Such a rare, iridescent bird.
And yet again, it sounded forced, tense, pressured. It came to Richards that Killian was holding information which he wanted badly not to tell.
If you really had it, you would have pulled the string when McCone put the gun to your head. You knew he was going to kill you. Yet you sat there.
Richards knew it was over, knew that they knew. A smile cracked his features. Killian would appreciate that. He was a man of a sharp and sardonic turn of mind. Make them pay to see the whole card, then.
I'm not buying any of this. If you push me, everything goes bang. And you wouldn't be the man you are if you didn't spin it out to the very end. Mr. Donahue.
Yes, sir.
Donahue's cool, efficient, emotionless voice came over the voice comm and out of the freebie almost simultaneously.
Please go back and remove Mrs. Williams' pocketbook from Mr. Richards' pocket. You're not to harm him in any way.
Yes, sir.
Richards was eerily reminded of the plastic punch that had stenciled his original ID card at Games headquarters. Clitter, clitter, clitter. Donahue reappeared and walked towards Richards. His face was smooth and cold and empty. Programmed. The word leaped into Richards' mind.
Stand right there, pretty boy,
Richards remarked, shifting the hand in his coat pocket slightly. The man there is safe on the ground. You're the one that's going to the moon. He thought the steady stride might have faltered for just a second, and the eyes seemed to have winced the tiniest uncertain bit, and then he came on again. He might have been promenading on the Côte d'Azur, or approaching a gibbering homosexual cowering at the end of a blind alley. Briefly, Richards considered grabbing the parachute and fleeing.
Hopeless. Flee. Where?
The men's bathroom at the far end of the third class was the end of the line.
See you in hell, he said softly, and made a pulling gesture in his pocket.
This time the reaction was a little better. Donahue made a grunting noise and threw his hands up to protect his face in an instinctive gesture as old as man himself. He lowered them, still in the land of the living, looking embarrassed and very angry. Richards took Amelia Williams' pocketbook out of his muddy, torn coat pocket and threw it. It struck Donahue's chest and plopped at his feet like a dead bird. Richard's hand was slimed with sweat. Lying on his knee again, it looked strange and white and foreign. Donahue picked up the bag, looked in it perfunctorily, and handed it to Amelia. Richards felt a stupid sort of sadness at its passage. In a way, it was like losing an old friend. "Boom," he said softly. -14, and counting.
"Your boy's very good," Richard said tiredly, when Donahue had retreated again. "I got him to flinch, but I was hoping he'd pee his pants."
He was beginning to notice an odd doubling of his vision. It came and went. He checked his side gingerly. It was clotting reluctantly for the second time.
"What now?" he asked. "Do you set up cameras at the airport so everyone can watch the desperado get it? Now the deal,"
Killian said softly. His face was dark, unreadable. Whatever he had been holding back was now just below the surface. Richards knew it. And suddenly he was filled with dread again. He wanted to reach out and turn the freebie off, not hear it anymore. He felt his insides begin a slow and terrible quaking. An actual, literal quaking. But he could not turn it off. Of course not. It was, after all, free.
"Get thee behind me, Satan," he said thickly.
"What?"
Killian looked startled.
Nothing. Make your point.
Killian did not speak. He looked down at his hands. He looked up again. Richards felt an unknown chamber of his mind groan with psychic presentiment. It seemed to him that the ghosts of the poor and the nameless, of the drunks sleeping in alleys, were calling his name.
"McCone is played out,"
Killian said softly.
"You know it because you did it. Cracked him like a soft-shelled egg. We want you to take his place."
Richards, who thought he had passed the point of all shock, found his mouth hanging open in utter, dazed incredulity. It was a lie. Had to be. Yet, Amelia had her purse back now. There was no reason for them to lie or offer false illusions. He was hurt and alone. Both McCone and Donahue were armed. One bullet, administered just above the left ear, would put a neat end to him with no fuss, no muss, or bother. Conclusion? Killian was telling God's truth.
"You're nuts," he muttered.
"No. You are the best runner we've ever had, and the best runner knows the best places to look. Open your eyes a little, and you'll see that the running man is designed for something besides pleasuring the masses and getting rid of dangerous people. Richards, the network is always in the market for fresh, new talent. We have to be."
Richards tried to speak. Could say nothing. The dread was still in him, widening, heightening, thickening. "There's never been a chief hunter with a family," he finally said.
"You ought to know why. The possibilities for extortion..."
"Ben,"
Killian said with infinite gentleness,
"your wife and daughter are dead. They've been dead for over 10 days.
-13, and counting. Dan Killian was talking, had been perhaps for some time, but Richards heard him only distantly, distorted by an odd echo effect in his mind. It was like being trapped in a very deep well and hearing someone call down. His mind had gone midnight dark, and the darkness served as the background for a kind of scrapbook slideshow. An old Kodak of Sheila, wiggling in the halls of Trades High, with a loose-leaf binder under her arm. Microskirts had just come back into fashion then. A freeze frame of the two of them, sitting at the end of the bay pier. Admission, free, backs to the camera, looking out at the water, hands linked.
Sepia-toned photo of a young man in an ill-fitting suit and a young woman in her mother's best dress. Specially taken up, standing before a JP with a large wart on his nose.
They giggled at that wart on their wedding night.
Stark black-and-white action photo of a sweating, bare-chested man wearing a lead apron and working heavy engine gear levers in a huge, vault-like underground chamber lit with arc lamps. Soft-tone color photo, soft to blur the stark, peeling surroundings of a woman with a big belly standing at a window and looking out, ragged curtain held aside, watching for her man to come up the street. The light is a soft cat's paw on her cheek.
Last picture. Another old-timey Kodak of a thin fellow holding a tiny scrap of a baby high over his head in a curious mixture of triumph and love, his face split by a huge winning grin.
The pictures began to flash by faster and faster, whirling, not bringing any sense of grief and love and loss, not yet, no, bringing only a cool Novocaine numbness.
Killian, assuring that the network had nothing to do with their deaths, all a horrible accident.
Richard supposed he believed him, not only because the story sounded too much like a lie not to be the truth, but because Killian knew that if Richard agreed to the job offer, his first stop would be Co-op City, where a single hour on the streets would get him the straight of the matter.
Prowlers. Three of them. Or tricks, Richards wondered, suddenly agonized. She had sounded slightly furtive on the telephone, as if holding something back. They had been hopped up, probably.
Perhaps they had made some threatening move toward Kathy, and Sheila had tried to protect her daughter. They had both died of puncture wounds.
That had snapped him out of it.
Don't feed me that shit!
He screamed suddenly. Amelia flinched backward and suddenly hit her face.
What happened? Tell me what happened!
There's nothing more I can say.
Your wife was stabbed over 60 times. Kathy, Richard said emptily, without thought, and Killian winced.
Ben, would you like some time to think about all this?
Yes. Yes, I would.
I'm desperately, desperately sorry, pal. I swear on my mother that we had nothing to do with it. Our way would have been to set them up away from you, with visiting rights if you agreed. A man doesn't willingly work for the people who butchered his family. We know that.
I need time to think.
As chief hunter, Killian said softly, you could get those bastards and put them down a deep hole, and a lot of others just like them.
I want to think. Goodbye. Richards reached out and thumbed the freebie into blackness. He sat stone-like in his seat. His hands dangled loosely between his knees. The plane droned on into darkness. So, he thought. It's all come unraveled. All of it.
-12, and counting. An hour passed. The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things, of sailing ships and sealing wax, and whether pigs have wings. Pictures flitted in and out of his mind. Stacy, Bradley, Elton Paracas with his baby face, a nightmare of running, lighting the newspapers in the basement of the YMCA with that last match, the gas-powered cars wheeling and screeching, the Sten gun spitting flame, Laughlin's sour voice, the pictures of those two kids, the junior Gestapo agents. Well, why not? No ties now, and certainly no morality. How could morality be an issue to a man cut loose and drifting? How wise Killian had been to see that, to show Richards with calm and gentle brutality just how alone he was. Bradley and his impassioned air pollution pitch seemed distant, unreal, unimportant. Nose filters. Yes. At one time the concept of nose filters had seemed large, very important.
no longer so. The poor you will have with you always. True. Even Richard's loins had produced a specimen for the killing machine. Eventually the poor would adapt, mutate. Their lungs would produce their own filtration system in 10,000 years or in 50,000, and they would rise up, rip out the artificial filters, and watch their owners flop and kick and drum their lives away, drowning in an atmosphere where oxygen played only a minor part. And what was futurity to Ben Richards? It was only bitchin'. There would be a period of grief. They would expect that, provide for it. There would even be rages, moments of revolt, abortive tries to make the knowledge of deliberate poison in the air public again? Maybe. They would take care of it. Take care of him. Anticipation of a time when he would take care of them. Instinctively, he knew he could do it. He suspected he might even have a certain genius for the job. They would help him, heal him. Drugs and doctors. A change of mind. Then peace. Contentiousness rooted out like bitter weed. He regarded the peace longingly, the way a man in the desert regards water. Amelia Williams cried steadily in her seat long after the time when all tears should have gone dry. He wondered indifferently what would become of her. She couldn't very well be returned to her husband and family in her present state. She simply was not the same lady who had pulled up to a routine stop sign, with her mind all full of meals and meetings, clubs and cooking. She had shown red. He supposed there would be drugs and therapy, a patient showing off. The place where two roads diverged, a pinpointing of the reason why the wrong path had been chosen, a carnival in dark mental browns. He wanted suddenly to go to her, comfort her, tell her that she was not badly broken, that a single crisscrossing of psychic band-aid should fix her, make her even better than she had been before. Sheila. Kathy. Their names came and repeated, clanging in his mind like bells, like words repeated until they are reduced to nonsense. Say your name over 200 times and discover you were no one. Grief was impossible. He could feel only a fuzzy sense of embarrassment. They had taken him, run him slack-lunged, and he had turned out to be nothing but a horse's ass after all. He remembered a boy from his grammar school days who had stood up to give the Pledge of Allegiance, and his pants had fallen down. The plane droned on and on. He sank into a three-quarter doze. Pictures came and went lazily. Whole incidents were seen without any emotional color at all. Then, a final scrapbook picture. A glossy 8x10, taken by a bored police photographer who had perhaps been chewing gum. Exhibit C, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. One ripped and sliced small body in a blood-drenched crib. Splatters and runnels on the cheap stucco walls and the broken Mother Goose mobile, bought for a dime. A great sticky clot on the second-hand teddy bear with one eye. He snapped awake, full awake and bolt upright, with his mouth propped wide in a blabbering scream. The force expelled from his lungs was great enough to make his tongue flap like a sail. Everything. Everything in the first-class compartment was suddenly clear and plangently real, overpowering, awful. It had the grainy reality of a scare tabloid newsy clip. Laughlin being dragged out of that shed in Topeka, for instance. Everything. Everything was very real and in technicolor. Amelia screamed affrightedly in unison, cringing back in her seat with eyes as huge as cracked porcelain doorknobs, trying to cram a whole fist in her mouth. Donahue came charging through the galley, his gun out. His eyes were small, enthusiastic black beads. What is it? What's wrong? McCone? No. Richard said, feeling his heart slow just enough to keep his words from sounding squeezed and desperate. Bad dream. My little girl. Oh. Donahue's eyes softened in counterfeit sympathy. He didn't know how to do it very well. Perhaps he would be a goon all his life. Perhaps he would learn. He turned to go. Donahue? Donahue turned back warily. Had you pretty scared, didn't I? No. Donahue turned away on that short word. His neck was bunched. His buttocks and his tight blue uniform
were as pretty as a girl's.
I can scare you worse, Richards remarked. I could threaten to take away your nose filter. Exuant Donahue. Richards closed his eyes tiredly. The glossy 8x10 came back. Opened them. Closed them. No glossy 8x10. He waited, and when he was sure it was not going to come back, right away, he opened his eyes and thumbed on the freebie. It popped on, and there was Killian. Minus 11, and counting.
Richards.
Killian leaned forward, making no effort to conceal his tension. I've decided to accept, Richards said. Killian leaned back and nothing smiled but his eyes.
I'm very glad, he said.